Hello and welcome to The Big Fight, a show that is young at 22, the oldest running debate show on Indian news television. I'm Sanket Upadhyay. In simple terms, our economy is in a difficult situation, a spot of bother. COVID has complicated matters further. And to achieve anything, the government needs funds, especially to fund the welfare schemes. Now, one way of generating revenue is to tax petrol and alcohol. That's like a sure shot way of earning a lot of revenue. But I do not know how far the tax on petrol will go. It's already at a record high. So obviously something else is required. Now, what should that be? So the government has decided a national monetization pipeline should be a good idea, where government assets are leased out to a private player or private players in exchange for some revenue. 6 lakh crore rupees to be precise. But would we pay a bigger price or pay a cost for the money that we earn post this exercise? Now the Congress says this is a bech day policy. Essentially, India on sale policy. We believe that an informed discussion is the need of the hour on a crucial issue like this, and not a typical political blame game, because that'll be an easy thing to do. That is why we have got the best names and the brightest minds from the country for you on this show tonight. You've got Dr. Rajiv Kumar. He is the VC of Niti Aayog. Mr. Kaushik Basu, a noted economist, and Nilesh Shah, MD of Kotak MF. I can't think of bigger and better names to be able to comment on a policy change as big and as serious as this. So the question that we are asking, is monetization a boon or a curse? I would like to welcome our first guest, Mr. Nilesh Shah. Thank you very much, Mr. Shah, for joining us right here on The Big Fight. Let me start by asking you that very question. Is monetization a boon or a curse for India and the Indian economy?
It is a boon if we monetize assets to create new assets. And it could become a curse if we monetize our assets to fund revenue expenditure. If we go to the history, Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister of United Kingdom in 1979. At that point of time, UK economy was growing negatively. She took many tough decisions, but one of them was asset monetization. She actually sold off those assets which were in the pockets of government. Every company, starting with British, whether British Gas, Power, Telecom, Airways, was sold off. And that money was used to build new assets and also reducing debt of the government. Those decisions helped United Kingdom economy to come back on track and start growing again. So we must use this asset monetization to create newer assets rather than funding revenue expenditure.
Mr. Shah, how can one do that? How can the government do that?
So essentially, Sanket, if we see today, the public-private partnership which was introduced earlier didn't take off because project execution was becoming risky due to various approval delays, due to land acquisition problem, and so on and so forth. That higher risk premium resulted into demand of higher return by investors. But if you are selling off an existing highway, then it is already constructed. You just have to collect the toll. It is much, much safer. And hence the return expectation of investors is much lower. We should create a cycle where government takes the risk of building infrastructure and then monetizes it by selling it or leasing it to the investors who will demand a much lower rate of return. And that money should be invested in developing new infrastructure. We have built highways, but the village roads are still behind. We have decongested highways, but our intercity roads still are congested. So we should use this money to build newer assets, which will help grow India at a higher pace.
Now, Mr. Shah, how about your response on this fear that this will essentially create a situation where the private sector, see, they're not going to own, they're not buying these assets. They're only taking it on lease, which basically means that it's not theirs to keep. Thus, there will always, or there can always be this feeling where, or this risk where the private sector is going to milk this asset dry and not really care about further asset building. I'm just talking about a risk, a potential risk. How would you respond to this?
See, there are so many investors today in the world where interest rates are near zero level, who all are searching for yields. Pension funds, endowment funds, sovereign funds want to invest in longer term yielding assets. And if we can provide them our infrastructure assets with a reasonable surety of return, they'll be more than happy to invest in India. Today, we have also seen crackdown by China on technology company, which has caused massive losses to investors. Even that money we can attract to India if we offer them good projects. And using that money, government should build newer assets. That way, we can create a cycle where with limited capital, we will be able to build more infrastructure, more assets.
Mr. Shah, what about the capability of the private sector? See, right now the government has a vision or a wish list that they would be able to monetize all these assets for 6 lakh crore rupees at the end of 2025. Now, you know the situation of the economy. Do you think that the private sector would be able to pay this much? Or will the government
definitely
be able to earn this much?
In today's world where interest rates are low and liquidity is high, there is problem of excess liquidity. Someone took a screenshot of a blank computer screen and sold it as an NFT at thousands of dollars. So there is excess liquidity which we have to tap. Now we must provide confidence to the investors that this assets will provide return to you so that the risk premium comes down and we are able to borrow at a cheaper rate. Any infrastructure which you can build at a cheaper rate will increase India's competitiveness. And I'll give you a small example, Sanket. Today, our goods train run at 25 kilometers an hour on an average. Some of the marathon runners will run faster than our goods train. This has increased India's logistics cost by 4 to 5%. Now, that's why we are not competitive in exports. That's why import can happen. Now, if we can build a dedicated freight care corridor equivalent railway track across the country and shift our cargoes which are moving on roads to railway and make our industry competitive, that will create a completely new level of growth.
All right. Mr. Shah, you know, we asked this question, monetization, a boon or a curse, on the Koo app. And one of our viewers has a question for you. Utkarsh says, is a national monetization pipeline basically a clearance sale of assets built over the last 70 years? And I'll tell you why this question becomes important, Mr. Shah, because you gave the example of the United Kingdom and Margaret Thatcher. There is also a counter example or an experience of Russia and the oligarchs, that this could create a situation like that as well.
So in the Russian case, what had happened was that the shares were distributed among investors who had no idea what they collected. If my memory serves me correctly, Gazprom, which was 25% owner of known gas reserves in the world, was available at $2.5 billion valuation because investors didn't know what they were selling to informed buyers. Now, in our case, we are not selling it to uninformed investors. We are selling it to informed investor assets in a competitive manner. In Russia's case, buyers were buying it from uninformed investors. In our case, we will be giving it to people with full knowledge what value of this asset is in a competitive manner. Now, let's not think that we are monetizing 70 years of assets. Let's think it that we are building next 70 years of assets with this money. Otherwise, our goods train 5 years down the line will run at 12.5 kilometers per hour, and after 10 years will run at 5 kilometers an hour.
Interesting. All right, Mr. Nilesha, thank you very much for joining us with your views. We also asked this question on a Koo poll to know what Indians on Koo think about this. The question was exactly that. What will be monetization's effect on the Indian economy? Boon, curse, or too early to say? So the results on your screen right now, these are Indians on the Koo app who think that it is going to be 70% a boon, 7% think it is a curse, and 23%, I think these are the intelligent people, who say that this is too early to say. We must add a rider here that these are Indians who use the Coup app and may not necessarily mean the overall view of all the Indians. All right. Our next guest this evening is a very, very informed voice. Mr. Kaushik Basu is a professor of economics at the Cornell University and also the former chief economist of the World Bank and former chief economic advisor. Mr. Basu, thank you so much for taking out your time. My first question, what do you make of this policy?
Sanket, the broad idea of putting to good use government assets which are lying, browning up because they are not being used well, is a very good idea. So it is not like one of those ideas where the idea itself is flawed. You want to energize this. But the way the monetization plan is being worked out, and I've been now looking at the details, which I had not done in the beginning, I think actually it's not the way to go. And let me explain this a little bit. You do want these government assets, state-owned assets, which are usually not well utilized. They are lying fallow, underutilized. You do want them to put to use. And even when I was in government, I would fret about that we don't use this well enough. Ideally, and there are countries that have done it, is that get the state itself to be more efficient. There are, Korea has state-run operations, very efficient operations. There are Nordic Scandinavian countries which have state-run operations, efficient state-run operations. But whatever be the reason, we have not done that. So you want to do something with it. So broadly, the idea is good. Now, what is being done, however, once you begin to look into the detail is, this is not that you're selling state asset. What you're doing is, and it's right that it's still owned by the government, but you're leasing it out for 25 years. In many ways, that is the worst option.
Oh, okay.
Because when you lease it out, you're giving it much lower price than selling the whole asset. Someone else comes to occupy. And you know, even if it's your home and you're giving it to a tenant and saying that, well, it's a 25-year-old lease I'm signing with you. You will live in my home. I still own it. You do know something which would happen is that it would, the wear and tear would be bigger than if it is the owner, because you don't have that much vested interest. And this is where my fear is. In the end, you're handing it over very, very cheap to someone who does not have enough interest in the fundamentals of the asset, because you are an occupier of this for 25 years. And the more I look into this, it is reminiscent of the 1990s Russia, where Boris Yeltsin, with intentions, who knows what the intentions were, was giving out, was not selling outright, but was allowing the private big firms, the oligarchs, to begin to operate them. And we know what happened. In the end, it was state capture, because it is like sitting tenants that you can never get rid of, and they are occupying a large share of it. So it would have been better to sell rather than lease, because lease is effective sales at the price of a lease. So it is for the ones getting in, it's the best possible deal. So, and this is nothing to do with India so politicized now, people jump in. All governments have that risk. Big players are such big players that they will try to capture. That is also their game. All governments have that risk. I think the mistake is going this route where it's better to sell clean. I've sold it to you highest price and you do whatever you want. To say that it's just a lease is a cheap sales taking place. It's a tremendous deal for the one who's buying, and it's not worth it. I can touch on one more side of it.
Sure.
It is being pointed out that the fiscal side of it is very important. The money that comes in, 6 lakh crores, that much won't come in. That's the value of the asset. Let's say about half of that comes in, which is in dollars will be what, $40 billion worth of money comes into the government's hands. This will be invested in infrastructure. That was the idea. I understand, again, spending on infrastructure is a good idea. But this is not the way to fund that in infrastructure spending. You could have sold off some assets, use that money to do it. The other thing you can do, take a little bit of money from government's foreign exchange reserves, create a sovereign wealth fund, use that to build up infrastructure. So the fiscal side of it is not justified, and the energizing of the state-run sector is giving it away at a dirt cheap price. You're going to create oligarchies that are going to asset strip the way it had happened in Russia, with huge damage to the economy. That, in a nutshell, is my really view about this. It's the wrong way to go. Good ideas, good purpose in end, but the wrong way to go.
Sure. Now, Professor Basu, I'll come to this term that you've used, asset stripping, in just a short moment. But would you like to elaborate on why you think that the projection of 6 lakh crores, that's the projection that the government has made that they will earn by 2025. Why do you feel they may not actually be able to make that much?
No, the government will not be able to achieve that much. My own calculation was over half of that the government will be able to raise. But even that is a decent amount of money. But touching on your thing, in this situation where the economy is going through a very, very difficult phase, in the end, you will collect more, less than what the value of this is, which is once again a transfer into the hands of a few businesses, a greater value with a smaller amount of money coming into the government's hands, which is once again pointing to the same problem. And Sanket, one more thing. You know, if you do want to give it at the best possible value, this I know, having been in government, there are ways of designing a sale. Auctions. Auctions can be designed by economists very well. And the way really the 3G auction had been designed was, in terms of design, a very, very successful design. So there are ways of selling in which you can extract a lot of money from those who are buying. But one is not seeing signs of this. So overall, I am very worried that no matter which side one's political view is, left or right, this is not something that ordinary people should support. This is, of course, something that a few big businesses will support because it is entirely in their interest.
All right, Professor Basu, now this is an important question and has come up during discussions a lot in India. What impact do you think this move is going to have on matters like processes, on regulation? You know, this is one rare moment where some of the experts are saying that regulation and bureaucracy could have actually helped. And now there will be no regulation or less regulation and less bureaucracy, which is actually going to be counterproductive. The government control is going to be less. And also, Professor Basu, what do you think is going to be the impact on jobs? Because that's a crucial cause of concern, the political cause of concern also. The Congress has...
Yeah, so there are pluses and minuses over here. Regulatorily, on the whole, this should be beneficial because private players will come in. It is not in their interest to hold things up slow and sluggish. So they will try to move things faster. So things are going to move faster. But the downside is some regulations are necessary regulations. The fact that you want the government to operate faster, the bureaucracy to operate faster, does not mean that you don't want environmental controls. You don't want regulations for the rights of the workers. Those are necessary regulations. So part of this will be for the good because things will move faster with the private sector. But the part of it will be bulldozing over regulations, which are desirable regulations, regulations which are there in capital market economy like United States, like Germany, like name any flourishing capitalist economy, they have lots of regulations. I mean, United States has a whole lot of regulations. They operate better and faster. If you bulldoze over those, that will be very damaging. Come to jobs. Jobs is a very interesting question. Very difficult to predict, frankly, because of two things that are going to happen. These will be energized more, these assets. But for a private player, in today's world with technology available, it's not in your interest to have a huge labor force. It's in your interest to run it efficiently, but use technology to the hilt so that you are keeping the employment lean. This is, again, something which, if the economy was flourishing, it would be fine. You think in terms of creating jobs in other ways. But India's right now, the biggest problem for India, I think, is the unemployment problem. Youth unemployment in India is shockingly high. we are up there with the worst performing countries in the world in terms of youth unemployment. So once again, this kind of an experiment where it'll be efficient but lean in terms of employment, this is not the time to do it.
Sure.
So overall, I feel it's a wrong move, which irrespective of ideology, people should be against.
Sure. Professor Basu, now for an important point, and this has again been raised politically, even otherwise, by some concerned economists. And they say that a move like this is, instead of creating a competitive environment, going to create a monopoly or a duopoly in this country in various sectors. What's your opinion?
Absolutely right. That one, that criticism is fully valid. There are no caveats to that. What this will do is, if you could break it up into 50 firms getting little segments of this, and it'll have to be designed very well so that they are competing against one another, you would get the private sector's efficiency. If, however, it goes to big corporations buying these up, you are just bolstering monopoly. And once again, I'll give you examples from advanced capitalist economies. Of course, they like the private sector to come in. But even in the United States, one of the biggest concerns, you got a whole lot of people thinking, is the risk of monopolization. That you want the private sector, but you don't want one private sector firm controlling this entire domain, because you will not get the benefits. And America's complex antitrust laws, which go back to the 1890s up to now, are grappling with this. India's antitrust laws, which are much more recent, are just not up to the task, and this will create monopolies and all the problems that we associate with monopolies, which is not the ideal that any market economist, any capitalist economy strives towards. Capitalism, a thriving capitalism, is a competitive private sector, not one private sector that owns or five private sectors that own this, and that risk is a very, very genuine risk. Sure. In fact, risk is a weak word. That will happen. You will get monopolization or duopolization or triopolization. It's all as bad.
Okay. Now, I mean, you're really sticking your neck out. You're saying that this is not a risk, but it will happen. But Professor Basu, do you think a balance can be struck when a government comes up with a formulation in which it is selling, or in this case, leasing assets, and also retaining its status as a welfare state?
That is the big challenge. You're putting your finger on exactly the critical thing. You do want, the government has a responsibility, especially in a country like ours, where still lots of people are poor. Even the middle classes, lower middle classes, need a fair amount of support from the government. That's the welfare state responsibility. You want the government to carry that out. On the other hand, I do believe that the private sector needs space to run efficiently and operate the economy. You have to strike a balance. What gets me worried about this plan is what we have observed over the last couple of years is we are just playing into the big business side of market capitalism. So that Scandinavian countries, the Nordic countries are capitalist economies, but they have the social welfare is taken very, very seriously. We are abandoning that and getting into crony capitalism, which is the worst of all worlds, because you hand it over to a few oligarchs, the business, and the state shrinks and doesn't even provide social welfare support. The example of that, ironically, comes from actually a communist country, which is Russia, which became an oligarchy with a few big businesses having captured the government and running it their way.
Professor Basu, now, you know, if the government were to seek your advice on what really can be done to fix this, for instance, you're highlighting the problems. The government feels it's a spectacular thing that it is doing. But should the government want to fix, what little tweaks can be brought about in this scheme, according to you?
Tweaking will not do it. If the government did ask me to advise, I would ask the government to roll back most of it and then do a very, very careful sector-specific privatization where you're actually selling it off. Number two, when you sell off, you have to design the sale so that the private sector buying it pays the full price of what the private sector is buying. this I know from my experience, and I'm giving you one from my own past experience in government, auctions selling, which we sitting in government, one segment of the spectrum auction, we had calculated with top bureaucrats that it would be $7 billion worth. Then you will recall that that auction was done by very sophisticated methods. Best of economists, economic techniques were used for the auction. So what we as bureaucrats thought would be $7 billion worth was sold for $15 billion. That was the value. And we would have sold it cheap. Someone would have pocketed that huge amount of money and gone. So the design of sales is very, very detailed. So I don't think tweaking will do. This should be rolled back and done very differently. And the government also has to be clear that this is a genuine risk of capture. And this is nothing to do with this government. Any government, Congress, CPM, when you are transacting in such big assets being sold out, there is always the risk of capture. And the first responsibility of a government is to be aware of that. Everyone is playing, the private sector is playing the game that the private sector plays. You have to be intelligent enough, and your first commitment has to be to the people, ordinary people, workers who have lost their jobs,
well said,
and then design policies in their interest.
Well said. Okay, my final question, Professor Basu, you spoke about monopoly. You know, you also spoke very briefly, and I would like to come back to that, this term called asset stripping. Would you like to explain what other problems can come up?
Yeah, the monopoly is one big. The other is what I was initially touching on. This is going to lead to asset stripping. This is a term that, again, comes from the Russian oligarchs, that if you get to operate a property which you don't own, you don't have an interest in leaving behind a valuable property at the end of 25 years. You're going to strip that property of all value and suck it out of it, make your own profit and leave. So what you're going to see is the asset stripping taking place where the money is being picked up into oligarchies. That's one huge loss to the state because you're giving away free money, and giving away free money to workers, to the poor is something. I feel it is desirable, but giving away free money to big business is not worth it. So that is one. And the second one is that you are not creating over here a market economy. You're creating here what you were rightly pointing to, and which other people have said, you're creating a duopoly or a monopoly or even three, four firms. If the big ones get to operate, it's not going to run like a market economy. It's going to run the way the pricing is done by monopolists. And one more thing, which living in the United States, I've become sensitive to, is historically, monopoly in United States, the monopoly policy, what was focused on the consumer. You're trying to protect the interest of the consumer. What a whole lot of people are writing, and the US government has now become aware, is that the other side of monopoly is the face of the monopoly with the workers. If it's one big firm employing hundreds of thousands of workers, it's the same problem on that side as the consumer faces with one big monopoly. The workers get a very poor deal. And so you want to use the monopoly laws to also protect worker rights. And that, even in the United States, did not receive attention for a long time, receiving a lot of attention now. In India, that problem, which is already an acute problem, is going to get worse.
All right, Professor Basu, great talking to you. Thank you so much for your insights. We're stopping for a short break at this moment on The Big Fight. When we come back, you heard Kaushik Basu's view. Now, let's hear what the government has to say. Dr. Rajiv Kumar, the Vice Chairman of the Niti Aayog, is going to join us after a short break. All right, joining us right now is the VC of the Niti Aayog, Dr. Rajiv Kumar. Dr. Kumar, a pleasure to talk to you. My first question, and you know, the questions that I'm going to ask you about the monetization pipeline, because this is a complicated subject, the questions will be so that people can understand, because I guess from the government's point of view also, the ultimate objective is to make people understand what the government is trying to do. So the first question is, a lot of people are saying that you're trying to lease something slash sell something which is technically not yours. It is built on the taxpayers' money. How do you respond to this?
The first clarification, Sanket, is that any apprehension or misinformation about assets being sold should be removed completely, should be eliminated, should be put aside. It's not in the picture. And anybody who says that is simply indulging in misinformation and misleading the people, which is not a good thing to do. So because it's very clear and has been made repeatedly clear that these assets are being leased, and at the end of their contract period, they will be mandatorily handed back to the government. So that's, and I think it's important to emphasize that, but there's a lot of misinformation which is going around on this. On the second question, which is that it's not our assets. Two things here. First, I'm sure that the taxpayer wants to get the best bang out of her money that she pays to the government. The normal taxpayer will never for a minute support assets built by her taxpayer payments to be used inefficiently or to be wasted or to be value left locked in them and not be used by the public at large. Because these assets, when they are used efficiently, generate growth, they generate employment, they generate the momentum in the economy, which benefits the taxpayer, which is what her real requirement is. That's the most important thing to understand. Second, it is the conventional and traditional theory of government that taxpayers' money is used in trust by the government, but the taxpayer, once having paid the taxes, leaves it with the government and at the government's discretion to use those monies as efficiently and as effectively as possible for public welfare and for improving the lives of the people. So the whole business of government in a democracy or in any other is a social contract between the citizens and the government that they will use the resources either generated by themselves or by the government in some ways or pays as tax revenues are in the custody of the government. Mm. And they are they are handing it over in trust that this will be used efficiently. And therefore, this is completely besides the point that this is not our money. Nothing in the government is ours. Everything is the taxpayers. And we work and the government works at their behest, as it were. Sure. So therefore, I think this is just it is nitpicking at best. And it is misinformation at worst.
Okay. Dr. Kumar, the next question, which obviously will cross people's mind, the thing with the private sector is, rightfully so, they look at profit generation. It is a part of a business practice. They're supposed to make profits. And if they want to streamline processes, especially in a case where they take a government property on lease, will be to make sure that there is no inefficient working which is happening, which includes an effect on jobs. Usually it is seen that the private sector is lays far more stress on getting people out of the job. I hope what you're saying, you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
The sentiment is that private sector will come and there will be job losses. How do you address this concern?
Yeah, let me address it through an example, Sanket, which is that let's say there is a proposal for station development through the public-private partnership. Now, all the stations in our country have very large properties, and all these properties are, in some, if you notice, are hugely underutilized. Now, if the private sector person will bring franchises to the stations, whether these are eateries or these are, entertainment places or these are, bookshops or, readerships, etc. What all sorts of things, if they bring those franchisees and give them space for generating the revenue and charge the revenue from them as rental, they will generate much more employment than they will be losing out. So it is completely a misunderstanding that the private sector will necessarily destroy jobs. No, the whole idea is that, and that's the whole idea about unlocking value in these places. There are properties, for example, which are totally underutilized, even in our hotel industry, or in warehouses which are derelict, in a derelict condition. Another example, a warehouse built 60, 70 years ago, built in a very different technology built with different ways, massive underutilization of the space that they've got. Now, in that place, you get a modern warehouse with multiple floors and extra spaces. It will generate more jobs than what it has got today. You know, it will get also forklifts. It will get everything else.
But so Dr. I think Kumar, this... What was stopping the government from doing this, if I may ask?
That's a very separate question. And we'll discuss that some other day about the governance and how that governance can be improved, etc. You know, and that, it's a completely different question. The government is addressing that as well. I mean, we just created the Commission on Capacity Building within the government. Constantly the effort is within Niti Aayog to make the government more accountable, more efficient. We've got the Development Monitoring and Evaluation Office, which now evaluates every scheme, 337 of them, on the basis of its performance. So that's a separate stream of thought, you know, and that will happen. But at the moment, you know, at present, what we've got are underutilized assets, the better utilization of which is bound to generate more jobs, not only in that sector, but multiplier effect down the road, for example, in infrastructure. And you always should look at both direct and indirect job creation, employment creation, when we are discussing these issues.
Sure.
I hope my examples have helped to clear this misunderstanding.
Okay. Dr. Kumar, the next question is about the estimates. The government in its pipeline says that you have an estimate that by 2025, you'll be able to raise about 6 lakh crore rupees. That's a huge and a very impressive amount, I must add. But the, you know, given the state of the economy, what if the private sector is unable to pay that much? Have you factored this condition in? What if they don't match your estimates?
Well, I mean, that's a contingency which is always there. But given the buoyancy in our stock markets, given you know the fact that a company, a startup like Zomato could get 43 times, is it, or 29 times the sort of, you know, the IPO amount, and it's got 2 lakh crore sitting in the bank as, you know, as you know, sort of a premium paid, you know, by the investor. I see no reason to be despondent or pessimistic. I think there's a huge amount of liquidity in the world, in the globe today. These assets will also be, you know, open for bidding by the foreigners. And I'm very excited by 2 or 3 inquiries already from given to us by our ambassadors in other countries, which are saying that sovereign wealth funds in those countries are interested, and pension funds are interested in investing in these assets because they like long-term returns at a steady rate from de-risk projects. And they could well, you know, just invest in it and hand the management over to the Indian companies. So given the amount of liquidity that there is in the world today, and then nobody can ever deny that, and which is, you know, and I'm sure that these assets will attract a lot of attention, not only from the domestic investors, but also from the foreign investors. So there's no reason to believe that these estimates will not be met. Yes, of course. If there are things, you know, there are always contingencies which come across, which happen, and that's always, as it were, a caveat which is there in every such proposal that we have.
Now, you know, various sectors, Dr. Kumar, for instance, the aviation sector, we've seen that many airlines went bleeding and then they rushed to the government for support to ask for a bailout package. Do you think, or have you factored this in as far as your planning is concerned, that suppose if these assets are monetized and if the private sector is unable to perform the duty or match the vision that you have of what they will do in terms of efficiency, that you will have to eventually come in and bail them out?
Hanket, each and every concessionaire agreement which will be signed between the line ministries who will take up this job and those who are going to bid for it are going to run it, will certainly have a clause that if the stipulated conditions are not met, then those assets will have to be returned to the government. Each concessionary agreement will have, you know, specific conditions which will have to be met by the concessionaire in return, you know, for the revenues that he, you know, earns and gives to the government. So it's not a carte blanche that anybody is giving. I mean, this is not even just verbal or theoretical. This will be in black and white in those model agreements. And always the cases that if you don't meet those conditions, for example, if your revenue generation falls short or if your services quality is not up to the mark, et cetera, then those concessions get annulled and gets back to the government for the government to decide what to do with it.
Dr. Kumar, some of the experts write in newspapers, it's generated a lot of buzz, but some of the experts say, and I find this surprising, this is a write-up in Bloomberg, which says that the sort of bureaucratic and regulatory control that used to exist, that we used to so dread in the Indian system, that, you know, this bureaucratic system has to go. Now, there are people who say that the bureaucracy actually worked to an advantage, that nobody could tamper with the systems. And that bureaucratic and regulatory control will, in effect, go. And this will be detrimental. How would you respond?
Why will that be detrimental? I didn't understand that one. I mean, why would be the removal or the...
Let me give you an example. Let's take the example of, roads. So if someone is going to build a road, operate the road, then what if there is arbitrary pricing as far as toll is concerned? Or there is arbitrary pricing in some other sector? How do you control that?
First thing, Sanket, these roads are not going to be built by the private partner. Because these assets which are being monetized are already either fully completed or nearing completion.
Sure.
But that's the quality of that asset, because they are completely de-risked from any associated project risk. Second, the price that they'll have to charge, et cetera, will all be part of the model concessionary agreement. I mean, nowhere in the world has the private partner been allowed to, operate without any caps or limits or constraints.
Sure.
And you have seen that, for example, in the airports which have been privatized, it's not been the case of profiteering at all, because there is the Indian Airports Economic Regulatory Authority, which looks at what you're going to charge, which looks at what the, what the tariff should be, et cetera, et cetera. So the entire, conversation seems to be quite, based on some assumptions that the government is walking away from its duty towards the citizens and towards the public. Not at all. In fact, the idea is, and the whole effort and the objective is to make life better for the citizens, and not to worsen it.
Okay, two quick questions. One question is related to, usually it is seen that when you monetize or privatize, it is with the intent to create a healthy competition where you get in the private sector also, and the government does not do all the business. But there is some criticism that the sort of people who will, or the industries who will be capable to take up an investment as heavy as this, will end up creating a monopoly or a duopoly. Dr. Kumar, don't you think that's a valid concern?
A number of these assets have always been in the nature of local monopolies. I mean, you don't get two highways between point A and B, and hopefully not, of the same quality. So, so whether railway stations or discoms, and there's a large body of literature on how to handle local monopolies, because this is what they are. They won't be even duopolies. And therefore, that is where government regulation and government's supervision and oversight is important. And I think that is what I said earlier, and I repeat myself, which is that the line ministry, the government will have to ensure that these conditions of, efficiency, pricing, etc., are there, the part of the concession agreement, and that the concessionaire will have to abide by it.
Okay.
By the way, there is already a lot of experience in our country about this.
Sure.
So it's not as if we are walking a new, we are going into unknown, uncharted waters.
Now,
the Mumbai-Pune expressway was monetized very long ago.
Sure.
And the tolls haven't gone through the roof, have they? No. And the traffic has increased.
Sure.
And the quality of the road has been maintained. And I can give you many examples of this kind, whereby this is to show that all these fears and apprehensions are really not based on our real experience in this country.
Dr. Kumar, my final question, and this is about the capability of India Inc. to be actually interested in a proposition like this. There is a Business Standard report
which says that India Inc's asset turnover ratio dropped to a new low of around 70% in FY21, which is the lowest in since financial year 2010. Now, if they're not using their own capacity, their own... How would they actually invest?
I read the report this morning, and this is about manufacturing capacity utilization, which is very low, and which is a cause of concern, and which requires that the economy starts moving and driving on as many engines as it can, and especially therefore of infrastructure investment. So it's not to do with their capability to run projects or manage projects, etc. And I think I have complete faith, and I know because I've been there, I've worked with the private sector in India, that they have huge amount of abilities and capabilities to manage projects, and that they will not. They've shown it in actual practice. There's a track record of private sector managing project infrastructure projects very well. Once they are de-risked, where they get into a problem is when they get into the problem of land acquisition and time overruns and so on. But they have shown the highest level of capability to manage and run these projects, and they will do so in the future.